A meeting to order for the House Agriculture and Rural Development Finance Committee. Members, you have before you or in your packet the minutes of the March 23rd meeting of this committee. Is there a motion to approve these minutes?
So moved.
Representative Marquardt so moves. Any discussion? We'll proceed to vote. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? The motion prevails. The minutes are approved. I first of all want to thank our committee's vice chair and our staff for so capably carrying on in my absence. And want to talk a little bit about what we'll be doing today. We have before us the grain buyers bill that this committee heard and passed to the general register. We'll be using that bill as the basis. No, we kept it here in committee, apparently.
No,
we did. We pulled it back mm-hmm. from the House floor and are using that as the vehicle for this committee's omnibus bill. We have before us a delete all amendment. The chair moves the delete everything amendment labeled A041217. I'd like to ask Mr. Rankin if he would be so kind as to walk us through the delete all amendment, please.
Madam Chair, yes, I'd be happy to. Committee members, the delete everything amendment that we have before us as a replacement for the original text of House File 2755 includes the old language from 2755 plus a number of additional bills, most of which were already heard in this committee. You will notice on the bill summary, a five-page bill summary we have, it lists the House files that the contents for the additions to this delete everything amendment came from. Sections 1 and 2 and 3 of the, we'll call it the bill now, of House File 2755. Sections 1, 2, and 3 are the governor's and the committee's recommendations for changes in last year's appropriation levels for the Department of Agriculture and for the Board of Animal Health. The total amount for the Department of Agriculture is cut by $390,000. Excuse me, $306,000. The amount for the Board of Animal Health is cut by $84,000. And there is also an increase given to the Department of Agriculture. That is for the invasive species program. That increase in Division 2 of Section 2 amounts to $191,000. There is also a statement, a rider statement in Section 2, Subdivision 1, saying that the reduction is for the biennium ending June 30 of 2005, and it must be taken from savings achieved without a reduction in services provided. Section 4 is language you have not seen in this committee before. This is one of the several programs that was operated under a revolving loan account. It was actually an account set up in session law, never codified into statute, set up in session law in 1988. We are amending this program, not in its process, but in where it gets its money from and where repayment of loans goes to be part of this larger pool of revolving loan programs. So you will see in Section 29 of this bill that we create a new account that pools this plus several other revolving loan programs. Sections 5 and 6 and 7 and 8 and 9. I believe these are how many? Give the Department of Agriculture additional flexibility and additional rights to provide the services that are needed for the export of Minnesota products and certification that they meet the standards that will be needed from the importers of those products. Sections 10 and 11 and 12 and 13 and 14 and 15 and 16, these several sections through section 16 are a partial rewrite of the County Fair or County Agriculture Society chapter. They simplify, we've heard these in this committee before, these several sections simplify the reporting requirements of the local ag societies and give a little more flexibility to counties and cities and townships as they choose to provide support to the ag societies for the benefit of the county fairs. Section 17, beginning on page 11 of the bill. Is a rewrite of the changes the legislature passed a year ago in 2003 on the reporting requirements and the ownership requirements for ethanol plants that apply for the ethanol producer payments. The original bill, Representative David's bill, would have totally eliminated the reporting requirements and the restriction on the ownership of various plants that were eligible to receive the producer payments. The version of the bill you see here kind of backs off from a repeal of those reporting requirements and instead modifies them a bit, makes some of the information public, does not link the report to the eligibility for the producer payments.
Representative Hiker.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In regards to that, this is all right with the ethanol producers, being that you did not make all of the changes?
Madam Chair, Representative Heidgerken, and committee members, it's my understanding, that's all I can say, that the several various parties that have dealt with this fairly intensively over the last 3 weeks or so are okay with it in this form.
Thank you.
Representative Heidkirk, and I might also add that we had a hearing on this bill and had the various plants involved come in and respond to the language as well. Mr. Rankin.
Madam Chair, committee members, beginning page 14, section 18. This is one of several sections that amend the various programs in the Rural Finance Authority and increase the total dollar amounts in each of six or seven programs, the dollar amounts by which the Rural Finance Authority can participate with local lenders in making program loans for beginning farmers, for livestock expansion loan programs, several types of operations that the or loan programs that the RFA has in place now. This merely, in each case, increases the total amount of state participation in those loans.
Madam Chair.
Representative Heidegger.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In regards to that, I thought we did all. You said we did six or seven?
Madam Chair, it's something on that order, yes.
You wouldn't know which one we didn't increase.
Mr. Rankin.
Madam Chair, to the best of my knowledge, I believe all of them that are participation loan programs, I think, did get increased.
Okay.
Some a fairly small amount, some a fairly large amount.
Okay.
But I think they all did. They're each listed in the bill summary. You can look at them in on page 3 of the bill summary. They're each listed there, the old dollar values and the new participation dollar values. On page 18, we're talking section 22 is a new program which is located within the Rural Finance Authority, and it is a program to help help dairy producers meet a number capital need that they have expressed that they have, and the Rural Finance Authority will participate in dairy upgrade loans with an eligible lender up to 45% of the principal amount of a loan, or $50,000. So this is a new program that will be added to the several they currently are operating. Sections 23 and 24 and 25 and 26 and 27 are all, again, expansions of the existing programs and the increasing the dollar amounts that a borrower can, that the state can participate with a local lender to a borrower. Section 28 is a bit of a change from current language. It talks about the repayment of financial assistance for this program going into the newly created fund that we'll talk about in section 29, which is next on page 22 of the bill. This is the establishment within the RFA of a revolving loan account that is used for several programs that previously existed and used appropriated money that was deposited in a revolving account where loans could be let out by the RFA. When they were repaid, the money went back into this revolving account and could be loaned out yet again. The new component is this new dairy program that is just created in this bill. It also becomes eligible to use the money in this revolving loan pool for the dairy loans.
Right. Representative Heidgerken.
Yes, Madam Chair. On page 22, subdivision 2 and section 28, my only concern here is there is establishing a state treasury revolving loan or fund. It's my assumption that basically this is new wordage, that actually all of those funds will be transferred into this revolving fund?
Representative Heidgerken, the RFA loans typically are bonding dollars and are repaid to the general fund. And this is new language that establishes a revolving loan fund, so we have those dollars available to recycle through the farming community again and again.
I realize that both of them are revolving funds. Mm-hmm. One is coming from the state treasury. My only concern is that all of the monies that are presently established or set aside in the state treasury, that we're not losing them by transferring them into this language.
Mr. Rankin, can you give...
Madam Chair, that is correct. There is no money lost in this process.
Okay.
The the separate pots of money which used to be available for the several programs, including the manure digester program and several others. I mentioned the one set up in session law back in 1988 for the shared savings loan program, a revolving thing program. That all the money from those three or four, or used to be three, now there's going to be four with the new dairy program, all of the money from those individual pots is captured and put into a single pot, and the loans can be made from the single pot to any of the four programs, each of the programs retaining their own internal program guidelines.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Ranka.
Madam Chair, Section 30, at the bottom of page 22, is merely more of the language that that updates RFA programs in general. Section 31 on page 23 is in Chapter 116J, which is a Department of Economic Development program, which allows grants through a somewhat indirect process, but ultimately it's grants to allow for dairy upgrades. And this is Representative Erdahl's program that I'm sure he can explain as much as you would like. I won't presume to tell you all the details. He can do that if you want to call and ask him a question later. Sections 32 and 33, there's several sections here, 34 and 35 were parts of the governor's recommendation. I don't believe we heard them. We didn't have a bill in front of us when we heard them in this committee, but these were the governor's recommendations. One of them, Section 33, we did hear, and that is an increase in the various levels for bonding for grain buyers. I think we did hear that one. I believe that should take us through Section 37. We're ready for Section 38 on page 30 of the amendment that we're working with. Section 38 is a rewrite of language that's been around since the early 1990s, which is a shield of nuisance liability against farming operations, particularly important in areas where you have an interface between an urban community and a rural community. And there have been problems with claims of liability because of the normal operating procedures that occur on the farms, the noises, the lights at night, the odors from the farming operation. This rewrites that. This has been heard fairly extensively. I believe this is language that pretty close to fully agreed upon by the various parties.
Madam Chair.
Representative Marquardt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I remember this bill we discussed. And one question I'd like to have is I looked on page 30, lines 33 through 35, where it talks about has to comply with all regulations of federal, state, and county laws. In any way, shape, or form, would this provision supersede any township regulations or nuisance laws or usurp any township powers? I guess that's the one question I have.
Representative Swenson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Marquardt. That was a bill I carried, and I have an amendment that the townships have discussed that the townships have talked to me about. And
okay.
Thank you.
That would be good. Thank you.
And Mr. Ray.
Madam Chair, yes, there is an amendment, and I'll note where it actually will be inserted, and that'll be on page 31 after line 29. There will be one additional paragraph that the townships apparently asked for.
And Mr. Rankin, we wrap up with. Oh, is there a question? Representative Otto.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Maybe it's more appropriate for the amendment, but I'm just curious, Representative Swenson, so the townships are going to be they approve of and they're in support of the amendment and then the actual bill that you had?
That's right.
Okay,
Representative
thank you.
Swenson. Thank you. Mr. Rankin.
Madam Chair, committee members, I believe that brings us to page 31, section 39. Section 39... and Section 40, we have heard in this committee, they have also been to several other committees, it makes explicit crimes, gross misdemeanor crime, of introducing certain diseases to domestic livestock. That's in Section 39. And Section 40 is for specific trespass on agricultural land which is used for domestic livestock and which is posted as a biosecurity area. This makes it possible to be certain that you can keep people, or at least criminalize the entry past a proper signage on property where a biosecurity program is in place.
Thank you, Mr. Rankin, and thank you for your considerable service to this committee and preparing us for today and all the language that
Madam Chair, we have one more.
Oh.
Page 33.
We'll put that on hold then, Mr.
Section 41 is part of the ethanol program. It's not codified, you'll notice. It doesn't have a proposed section, statutory section number. This is an instruction to retroactively make payments that may have been withheld for those plants that did not supply the necessary disclosure information on who their owners were during the last half of 2003. Finally, Section 24 says that when money comes in from these various loan programs that are part of revolving loan programs, then you put it into this this new account we have created. There are repealers, most of which are not particularly significant. Some archaic stuff from the county fair chapter, which is chapter 38. One that you should take note of, though, and that is that the private manure applicator certification program, as requested by the Ag Department, is being repealed. Madam Chair, I believe that completes the walkthrough of the amendment we have before us.
Thank you, Mr. Rankin. And as I was saying, as I was interrupting you, thank you for the support you provide this committee and our members. Members, we have visiting today off to my left in the seating area, students from the Agriculture and Food Sciences Academy, along with the Executive Director of the Minnesota Agricultural Education Leadership Council, Ms. Julie Tesh. Welcome to our hearing today. We're putting together the House Agriculture and Rural Development Finance Omnibus Bill. So we'll be working our way through that process. Good to have you here. Members, we do have before us this Delete Everything Amendment. Is there any discussion on this amendment? Representative Hennis.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. This question, I think, is for Sam. I didn't hear what he said about private manure.
Yeah.
Mr. Rankin.
Well, no, I mean, whatever.
You want it to stay private representative?
Let's keep it private.
We referred to private manure haulers, private manure distributors, I don't know what you want to call them. Could he just repeat it? Licensing. There we go. There she blows.
Certification program for private applicators. Representative Heidgerken.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Sam, would you, Mr. Rank, would you explain that, how that's going to affect the private applicators?
Mr. Rankin.
Madam Chair, Representative Heidgerken and committee members, the law was passed, I think 4 or 5 years ago, that set up both a commercial and a non-commercial or private applicator certification process. And there was a study group that looked at it. The private applicator certification was for people who wanted to manage their own farm's output of animal waste, and these are fairly large farms. There was a threshold for where they would have to be certified. And as far as I know, the program has not been fully implemented. A lot of folks feel that it probably was not worth the effort to proceed with this, so the language enabling it is what is being repealed here. We could ask the department for further clarification of that, if you'd like.
Thank you, Mr. Rankin. I wonder if I could call Mr. Bozicki from the Minnesota Department of Agriculture to add anything that's necessary to that. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Bozicki.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Greg Bozicki. I'm with the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. Mr. Rankin has this correct. We do have concerns. We have done the study, and our concerns are very simply fiscal and participatory. The fiscal issues are, we estimate that costs divided between the Department of Agriculture and Minnesota Extension Service would be about $100,000. We've looked at this several times to get the program established, and then in excess of at least $20,000 annually to maintain the program. We don't have those dollars at this time, nor have we an appropriation for this this year for implementation. So there's the cost issue. A number of things have changed, actually, since the report that was done, I believe, in 2001. And one of those factors that have changed is that there's increased federal dollars for manure management plans. A second thing that has happened is that there is significant participation by some sectors in the animal agriculture industry of our commercial manure animal licensing program. In other words, commercial manure applicators are being certified, or being licensed, I should say, and there's quite a number of them out there. I think about 330 we currently have licensed. So the department is very simply suggesting or requesting that we be relieved of this, because we don't believe that it would be worth the dollars it would cost to implement the program. And Madam Chair, one final word. I mentioned this in my overview. We have not provided any language, but just for the record, I do want to point out that the Pollution Control Agency has communicated with us, and they would like to keep part of the language that we suggested being repealed, but they would also like to extend out one more year the requirement in Subdivision 1 that basically requires those with capacities above 300 animal units or more that the manure is either applied according to a manure management plan or by a commercial applicator. So they would actually like to preserve at least one section of this provision that we asked to repeal. And the Department of Agriculture is okay with that change. So I apologize for bringing that to the committee's attention at this time. but I did want to at least mention that.
Representative Heidkirchen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Lazicki, I've got a series of questions here. Okay, so my understanding now, you want to extend, and I kind of like that idea of extending the repealer for 1 year for the farm management as far as managing manure, right? And this would affect the farmers with, and they're small farmers at 300 units. So that would extend it one more year. In regards to the federal new mandates, and I haven't had a chance to see them, I know there's, you mentioned the MPCA, I noticed that within the federal legislation, there's a new way of testing. And correct me if I'm wrong, previously we had tested the groundwater for nitrates. My understanding, the federal government is going away from that and is going towards phosphorus. And manure is heavy with phosphorus. Is that true? Or
Madam Chair, Representative Heidkirchen, I'm really unfamiliar with the testing and the standards and the federal NPDES permits, so the details. There may be somebody else who can be more informed, but I don't think I'm going to be able to answer your question. I know the federal government is concerned about phosphorus, but I wouldn't be able to answer your questions.
Madam Chair?
Representative Hyde.
Okay, have there been any other, are we getting any extra federal funds to the Department of Agriculture, Minnesota, matching grants or whatever, that I'm sure we're getting some. It'd be nice to see as a committee as to what we get from the federal government. If there'd be a possibility of getting a printout, and so we get a better concept of how the federal government is helping the state and which ways we're working together, and I've never seen anything along those lines.
Mr. Bozicki.
Madam Chair, Representative Heidkirchen, would you be referring to some of the federal farm bill dollars that are coming forward? I do have a little bit of information, but I would not, as it relates to our concerns here, that I could indicate, but I don't believe this is complete. I know there's some other people in the department. But I would just, for example, I would just tell you that in FY, federal year 2004, there's been about $23 million allocated for Minnesota for the EQIP program. And over from 2002 and 2003, we looked at some of the numbers, and we do have an increasing amount of contracts and land involved in developing nutrient management plans. So we are aware of that, but if you would like all of the details and it's a complex program, I would have to relay that to some of our experts
thank
at the
you.
Department.
If you would.
And I will do that.
No. Okay, thank you.
Representative Erdahl.
I was going to ask, thank you, Madam Chair, and I don't know who asked this of, but Mr. Rankin was talking about ethanol producers who refused to disclose ownership information in 2003 would be given payments. How many refused to pay in 2003? Does someone have that information?
Mr. Bozicki.
Madam Chair, I'd have to defer to someone else in the department.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Jim Borbom, Assistant Commissioner with the Department. I'm understanding that maybe there's one entity that has not paid, or that we have not paid, and that is Kraft, which obviously this bill would address. And as Sam Rankin pointed out earlier, the new language would not tie the producer payment to the disclosure. In other words, the producer payment would be made regardless of the disclosure, and then the language that you see in the bill today was language that was worked out between the industry and the governor's office.
Representative Erdahl.
That's all. Thank you.
In reference to the issue addressed previously regarding the private manure applicator training, on page page 33, section 43, there's repealer language that includes the repeal of section 18C.433. That's the provision that sets up the private manure applicator program. So that's the extent to which it's referenced in the delete all amendments. So members, if there are no further questions, we do have the delete everything amendment before us, and we have a number of amendments to work our way through. Are there any questions or further discussion on the delete all amendment? Representative Hyde Gerken.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Rankin, I see when I page through the bill itself, delete all, we see a number of fees initiated. Again, some new fees. Is there a printout, or is there a total number of fee increases that this bill has? I noticed with the grain, it went up. There's a good number of places where the fees went up. Is there I realize we're cutting so much in administration, and I know the numbers there, I have that, but I don't have the numbers on in regards to how much the fee increases would be.
Representative Heidgerk, and I'm going to ask Becky Leshner from the department to comment on that. Ms. Leshner. We also, Representative Heidgerk and members, have a spreadsheet in the packet that summarizes the movement of dollars in the bill. Thank you, Ms. Leshner.
Madam Chair, for the committee, for the record, my name is Becky Leshner. I'm with the Department of Agriculture. In response to Representative Hagerkin's question, I'm going to actually refer you to the spreadsheet that was passed out today. There were several different, there's four different fees that are raising different amounts, but between all four of them, the increase will be $77,000 into our dedicated accounts. And if I may also clarify, for three of them, we're asking for what are called, I'm terming technical amendments, for example, on the fruit and vegetable. If you remember previously, we talked to you about that. We work under a USDA delegation agreement. And under that agreement, we work with USDA, and once in a while, we need to they ask us for our services outside of the state of Minnesota. Current law says inside Minnesota, so we're trying to bring the delegation and our statutory and since we're going to do the work outside, we're going to get paid for that, so it's not a fee increase in that particular. It's just allowing us to collect those fees for services we provide. For the grain scale testing, again, it's under a USDA delegation agreement that we do grain inspection, weighing, sampling, and scale testing. Previously, that had been done by public service, and they informed us last year that they would no longer be doing it at the export location, so under the agreement, we're responsible to do that. So again, we're asking, since we're doing the work, we'd be able to collect the fees. The third one was the phytosanitary, which we did a rewrite last year. And there are certain instances where it's to our producer's advantage that we ask for the commissioner to be able to set a fee that's less than the full fee in the law for certificates that are, in my understanding of it, and we can ask Mr. Brzezicki or Mr. Friso to come up and explain in more detail. They're not the full-blown phytosanitary certificate that we refer to in law, but they're going to be something that is required for our growers and to ship product. But they won't pay the full fee. They will pay a lesser fee. And then the fourth one is the grain buyers. And that actually is a fee increase that we were asking for. And the reason why we're asking for that particular fee increase is we've had various expenses with the attorneys generals and the administrative law judges that are forcing us, which we have to pay those costs, and to recover, we need that. We're being forced to raise the fee to be able to cover those costs.
Thank you, Ms. Leshner. Representative Penna.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I think this question is also for Ms. Leshner. I'm I'm well aware of the grain buyer's fees, but I'm referring to the bill on page 29. And starting with line 20, and it runs through the next page, line 8. Did we not before have examination fees for stored grain, license to store grain? It all seems to be new language, and I haven't seen that before.
Ms. Lesner.
Madam Chair, with your permission, I'd actually like to invite Jim Grunewski, as he's the program director in this area, to explain this in more detail. His knowledge is much more extensive than mine.
Welcome to the committee.
Madam Chair, my name is Jim Grunewski. I'm Assistant Director of the Ag Marketing Services Division. Representative Pennis, Madam Chair, the examination fees previously were in rule, and we wanted to do a fee increase for those services. We had to move the fees to statute, and that's what we're doing in this case.
Representative Pena.
Madam Chair and Mr. Hughes, I'll never pronounce your name right, I'm sorry. How much of an increase are these, or maybe Sam can answer this, is this the scheduling that you had prior to this in rule, like less than 150,000 bushels and then 150,200? And then what's the examination fee increase here?
Madam
Mr.
Chair,
Grunewski.
Representative Pennis, the fee schedule as far as which categories there are, that has remained the same. The difference is that from rule to statute, there's about a 10% increase in the fee amount.
Thank you. Any further discussion on the Delete Everything Amendment 1217? If not, we'll proceed to vote. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? The motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. We'll begin with the A6 amendment. Representative Swenson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I think the members will probably realize that the decision was made not to do an ag policy omnibus bill, and we had passed some of these bills on earlier and acted on them and sent them forward on their own. We are taking some of the bills that we'd acted on previously and putting them into the omnibus bill. And that's what the A6 amendment is a bill that we passed out of our committee earlier on in the session dealing with veterinary licensure, was brought by the State Veterinary Licensing Associate Bureau, and it was passed through this committee earlier with pretty unanimous support. So that's what the A6 amendment is. It's a bill we previously, and I would move the A6 amendment.
Any discussion on the Swenson motion? If not, we'll proceed to vote. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? The motion prevails. Representative Swenson, your A2 amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. The A2 amendment was brought to me by the State Cattlemen's Association, and I think it's pretty self-explanatory. It details that producers can buy some of these drugs and administer them and so forth without a prescription. Mr. Bruce Clavin is here. If there's questions and if you want further explanation, maybe he could just take a minute and explain
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Clavin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Bruce Clavin, representing Minnesota State Cattlemen. This should just take a minute, Madam Chair. This issue was brought last year by the State Cattlemen in that they had a resolution to purchase prescription drugs without, or live virus vaccines without a prescription. It was in the Senate bill last year, and some confusion in the conference committee caused it to drop out. In the meantime, the Board of Animal Health has done rulemaking on this very issue. They've had a number of comments, and there's a possibility of a contested case hearing. They need 25 people to request that. They've only had 7 at this point, so it's unlikely that they'll have to go through the hearing. So our thinking was, and I talked to Dr. Hartman about this a couple weeks ago, was to put this in with the understanding that if the rule proceeds without a contested case hearing, it simply could be dropped off later on, either on the floor or in conference. But we would avoid the germaneness problem if we put it on today with the understanding that we could take it off later. So that's the issue, members.
And Madam Chair,
Represent this one.
I also have talked with Dr. Hartman at the Board of Animal Health, and they indicated no opposition. So.
Representative Hyde-Gerken.
Okay, I'm not concerned about the Board of Health, but I'm concerned about the Cattlemen Association, and they're okay with this?
Mr. Clavin.
Sorry, Madam.
Madam Chair, Representative Hyde-Gerken, they're the ones that brought it. Yes, sir.
Okay, thank you.
Swenson moves the adoption of the A2 amendment. Is there any further discussion? Now we'll proceed to vote. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? The motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Swenson amends with the A8 amendment. Representative Swenson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I would move the A8 amendment. And this, this committee members, is the amendment that I referred to in response to Representative Otto's question about the townships. This is being added to the nuisance provision language to accommodate the concern that the Association of Townships had, and they have indicated that you know that they're okay with it, and this provision was put on in the Senate side. So.
Any discussion on the A8 amendment? Now we'll proceed to vote. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? The motion prevails. The amendment is adopted.
Yeah.
Representative Swenson, do you have any further amendments?
Madam Chair, I have the A5 amendment that I would like to offer and move the A5 amendment. And Madam Chair, this is a provision that has been brought to me in conjunction with the trespass bill, and Mr. Todd Iverson is here. He brought the issue to me and asked if I could present it, so probably if it would be appropriate if he would want to explain the amendment.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Iverson.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Todd Iverson, for the record. I'm representing the Aggregate and Ready Mix Association on this matter. Members, this is briefly adding, as you see on page 3 of the amendment, aggregate mining site to the definition of in 609, basically putting it in the same condition as a locked construction site. And the problem that our members are seeing is four-wheel drivers that are going around over berms into the site, and quite honestly, they're not doing a lot of damage by driving up our rock sites, but we're moving equipment all the time. And our insurance companies are very worried about the liability. We've talked with the county attorneys. They've recommended that this would allow them to charge under to the trespass site, and it seemed like the best place to put it was with the locked construction sites. It's more for clarification for a number of county attorneys. I've been working with the Kandy Ohi County Attorney in particular on this issue. So thank you for the consideration, and if there's any questions, I'd be happy to answer them at this point.
Any questions of Mr. Iverson?
And Madam Chair, I would
Representative Swenson.
You know, the reason it was brought here is we have we have trespass language in this bill, and so Mr. Iverson felt this would be an appropriate place to try and add the language.
Representative Penis.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Is this a situation of just where you want a little more backbone behind the law? Because as I see it, all you have to do is report them. They're trespassing. You got it posted properly?
Madam Chair, Representative Penis, it was at the request of this particular county attorney that we bring this forward for clarification. From his perspective, that's exactly why it's here.
Okay. Thank you.
Any further discussion on the A5 amendment? Hearing none, we'll proceed to vote. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? The motion prevails. The amendment is adopted.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
A4, amendment to Representative Junkie.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, this is a E85 amendment. I handed out a number of things to you previous to us starting. One of them is the state statutes. I think it's a good thing to review. Statute 16C 135 states basically that the state needs to do two things. Number one, when they're replacing their fleet, whenever possible, they need to replace it with what we're calling flexible fuel or dual fuel engines. So, you know, if you're buying a car, you look for one like the Ford Taurus or something that can run on E85. If you're buying a pickup, you look for a pickup that can run on E85 or et cetera, et cetera. Obviously, there's some vehicles that wouldn't have a category that would fit. The second thing that we require, obviously, is once you purchase the vehicle, you should actually use the fuel, which only makes sense. And that's what we push for as members of this committee for many years, is what's, you know, I think the state ought to lead by example, and we're going to flexible fuel vehicles and burning E85, good for our farmers, good for our industry, and everything else. True story, and this is how things happen in legislature always. It's never something that you make up yourself, but it happens to you or in your community. What spurred this amendment, members, was I was sitting at a Holiday gas station in Wilmer, Minnesota, and in pulled a white Ford Taurus state vehicle, as we all see in our districts from time to time, and started fueling up. And as I was sitting looking at the vehicle, I noticed it had the FFV on the side, so I knew it was a flexible fuel vehicle and could run on E85. Unfortunately, the station they were fueling in Wilmer didn't have E85, while there are two other stations in the town of Wilmer that do have E85. So it started my thought process: if this is happening with this vehicle at this station at this time, how many other vehicles does it happen with, contrary to what Minnesota law says? So our office this summer actually went to work. We asked the major users of vehicles to give us a report, and we do have Department Administration or Travel Management is here, and they were very good, by the way. I'll be honest with you, it was like pulling teeth from MnDOT to get this, but Travel Management, Admin, DNR, and DPS were all pretty good. What you see then is a report sheet from, I took a single month snapshot, because it's, you know, to get a year's data, what I didn't think was necessary, but let's look at one single month and what's happening. So what we did is we looked at June, I believe, of 2003. What you see on top, number one, these are the number of vehicles in these fleets that are E85 capable now. So as you can see, Travel Management in particular, I commend them. You can see out of their vehicles, they now have 54% of them that are flexible fuel vehicles. I think one question we need to ask in the future is why DNR, MnDOT, DPS, there's a reason, because most of those are police or public safety vehicles, and they're exempt from it, so you're not seeing them purchase. But when you see MnDOT at only a 16%, you have to wonder, are they not replacing their vehicles as timely as admin is, and why are they such a lower number? That's something else we need to look into, members. I didn't do that till I saw this, but that's a future consideration to make sure they're following that rule of law to purchase the vehicles. But secondarily, so then when we look at the E85 vehicles, if you take that last column, we go down then to number two, which says, okay, out of the vehicles that can burn E85, what percent of them are actually purchasing fuel that's E85? And the assumption we made was, as we pulled slips at the gas stations, if the charge slip came from a gas station that had E85 pumps, we just assumed they were putting E85 in. That isn't necessarily true, but that's as close as we can get, because some stations don't list it that closely. But we certainly could tell which gas station they were in. And what we found from Travel Management was during that one particular month, only 16% of the fuel going in them flex fuel vehicles was E85. And you can see the percents for the others. They were the best of the best, and everyone else went down from there. So, members, what this bill does is simply establish that we'd like to have a little report. We have to find out a way to monitor this, because obviously it's not happening. Even with our own you know, within our own halls here. This requires the folks that run these fleets to report back on these same figures we're seeing here, which is very easy to do. They get the slips, and it's just simply putting them in the computer, which they're doing now, and categorizing them so that we can get a report. And then requiring them to meet a certain level. At this point, if they don't meet, the bill says, and we can talk about this, I'm open to changes, but if they're using less than 75%, as you can see, we're at 16, 10, 5, and 8, we'd like to move them up to 75%, and if they're not, then there is a monetary a penalty. And the reason there's a monetary penalty, as we all know, E85 now is running anywhere, I've seen it anywhere from 20 cents to 40 cents less than regular fuel. So by not burning E85 right now, we're actually losing money in these budgets. And they ought to be seeking those pumps out and that fuel out and using it, number one. So if they don't reach that level, then what we're going to ask for is I believe it's 25 cents per gallon difference in there to be refunded back into the general fund as a penalty. Because, again, I think we ought to be using it, and it's a way to put teeth into the law. And really, what I do think is it's a matter of education with the people that are using these cars. I mean, stick a big yellow sticker on top of the dash that says this is an E85 vehicle. Here's the list of E85 stations. This is where you shell fuel. And I think we can get that usage up. Obviously, the person that was in Wilmer at the pump that day had no clue that it was an E85 vehicle and no clue that there were two stations in that town that she could have gone to. So I know the department maybe have some comments. I did hand out a map. One of the concerns, and I certainly can concur, as you can see in the state, there's almost nowhere you can go anymore and not find an E85 pump within a few miles, especially if you're traveling with state vehicles across the state. The one concession I would make is this: is if you're domiciled, Representative Pennis, in your area, I don't know what you're doing up there, all the good stuff you got up there for agriculture. But anyway, yeah. Crookston and Thief River and some of those areas up there don't have, apparently, E85 stations yet. Even International Falls and Duluth has them, where there's not a lot of corn. But we don't see them over there. We'll work on that with you, Representative Pennis. But certainly, if you're an MPCA vehicle or something that's domiciled in those regions, obviously, they can't find the 85 unless they have a tank in their, in the MnDOT station or something where they could get it, which is another point of discussion. Why isn't MnDOT and others putting in more tanks for usage of this? And I guess I'd leave it up to the committee and or the Department of Administration. What percent of the vehicles' miles total do they think is traveled within those regions where there are no E85 pumps? And we would certainly, if you think it's more 75 doesn't fit and 60% would be better or 50%, I mean, I'm willing to look at something as a start. We can review it as it goes. And Mr. Morse is here from the department. Madam Chair, if you would like some ideas or suggestions from him also.
Yes, Mr. Morse.
And again, Madam Chair and members, don't beat up on him because he's been very, very helpful. The Department of Administration was very good at this, and I'm not here to condemn at all. We're just trying to get some compliance into this with the state vehicles because we passed these laws and we thought they would be complied with, but they're not right now.
Well, let me assure you, Representative Junkie, I've been in touch with the agencies following up on the requirement that we have for them, and I agree that we need to remind them that this is in place and gently nudge them toward compliance. I don't know how punitive we want to get on it is my question, and how much do we want state employees driving around town looking for the one station in that county for fuel? So we need to talk.
We can talk about that, but I think that in most of our small towns, if you can't find the station without stopping. I know men, Madam Chair, hate to stop and ask for directions, so that's probably one of the problems. But I think the female employees would definitely find the station. So,
Mr. Morris, welcome to the committee.
Thank you. My name is Tim Morris. I work for the Department of Administration. I work in the Travel Management Division as a director. And I would like to, first of all, say thank you for inviting me. And second, the Department of Administration is in complete alignment with the intent of this bill, which is to promote the use of E85 fuel. I have a couple of concerns, and I believe that there are things that can be overcome, probably easily. Representative Junkie was talking about the density of stations in northern Minnesota, which is one of my concerns. There are a number of vehicles in northern Minnesota that operate in that area and don't have ready access to the fuel. The other concern is the reporting stream, the fuel reporting stream that comes in, which comes in through the state purchases its fuel basically with a Ride Express credit card. And we're finding that in many cases, the information coming in, even though the purchase may have been E85, was made at an E85 station, is coming in showing gasoline or diesel fuel or something else. The station attendant didn't know what the code, so their own code comes in. And we expect that with time that will improve. Especially as we get more stations in Minnesota and people become more familiar with the fuel, that will get improved data coming in.
So, Madam Chair.
Representative.
And I'd ask the department, what percent do you think would be a fair percentage in there? You're at 16% now usage on your E85 vehicles, and obviously that's sorely, I think two comments too, I guess. Is it possible for you also to manage your fleet in such a way that you put the regular fuel vehicles more in the northern area where there aren't the E85 stations, where you know there's stations domiciled? You kind of manage to put the Ford Tauruses that are flex fuel down south and the other ones up north, is what I'm getting at. Do you look at that, and can you look at that?
Mr. Morse.
Madam Chair and committee members, certainly it is something that can be looked at. Our drive up to this point has been to get as many flex fuel vehicles out as we can. Regardless of where they end up, it would be our hope that E85 fuel would be available eventually sometime during the lifetime of that vehicle. So we haven't tried to manage keeping the flex fuel vehicles in the areas where there are stations. It's been a very shotgun approach in trying to get as many as we can out all over the state.
Representative Junkie.
And Madam Chair, I guess I would ask the department, I'm not married to the language of on the punitive part of it. I'm just trying to figure out how we get the compliance. Do you feel by reporting back once a year we can start to get a picture, and are you feeling we should hold off on that section until we see if you're making some substantial improvements, or are you comfortable with some sort of goal that we set for you?
Mr. Morris.
Madam Chair, committee members, ultimately, of course, it's your decision to make about where that number should be. As I look at it, I think any attention that we draw to the agencies, helping them increase the talk and the awareness level of E85 will be helpful in use of the fuel. So I think the reporting part of it is very good. If we looked at the penalty part of it, maybe we need to get reporting information first before we decide where that penalty should be set, or maybe we need to ramp up that over a number of years, expecting increased usage.
Madam Chair.
Representative.
I guess I'd be comfortable if the committee is at this point just to delete Section 6, and I'd incorporate that into my amendment. That really just takes out the percent, and it takes out the penalty for now. What the rest of the bill then says is starting September 1st of this year, and then at six-month intervals, so when we're in session next year, we'll get a report also. And then we can take a look at it and see if they're making some substantial progress a year from now. If that 16% is only going up to 17 or 18, perhaps we then at that point want to say we've got to do more. With the committee's blessing, I would do that, Madam Chair, at this point and move forward with it.
So Representative Junkie deletes Section 6 on pages 2.
Right. On page 2, Section 6, and I just incorporate that, Madam Chair, and make it part of my amendment.
All right. Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Representative Demmer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Junkie, this is great stuff. Thank you, and I commend you, because that's just real interesting to me. I was thinking about this before you brought up the part about the penalty thing, and as a thought, now maybe we can't do this today because we need some more information, but as opposed to a penalty, since there's savings here, maybe we tell them that they get half of that savings computed as they use ethanol, and that's something they can look at to enhance their budgets. There'll be savings anyway built in because the ethanol is cheaper, mm-hmm. but if we sweeten that a little bit and say, well, we're saving 25 cents, maybe they get half of that, whatever that savings is computed to be. Probably can't do that today. I don't know if we need fiscal stuff and all that, but going forward, I like your idea about maybe just let's get here back another year. And I hope thinking that there might be incentive that doesn't give them a disincentive for going forward, but it might be another way to look at it, as opposed to saying, here's your penalty if you don't do it. Well, here's what you get if you do do it. And it might help. So just a thought, Representative Junkie. But I like this great stuff. Thank you.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I want to join Representative Demmer in applauding efforts to get more usage of E85 fuel. But I'd like to speak briefly for those who may be energy impaired and those people who may damage our state vehicles by putting E85 in vehicles that should not have it. Maybe we should have stickers, "This is not an E85 car." I will tell you, it does work in a 2001 Intrepid, even though it's not supposed to, but I wouldn't recommend it putting it too often.
Well, Madam Chair, it does work in all vehicles is the problem, but over time it'll corrode the gaskets and other things. There's special gaskets and other things in the flex fuel, so it actually works in all the vehicles. But you're right, for how long? Your engine life will be shortened if you use it constantly.
Representative Hyde-Gerken.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Junkie, I'm quite familiar with the bill. I authored the E85 bill in the House some time ago, and Senator Johnson has the bill over at the Senate. And the bill is a little bit different than yours. Yours is talking about the department's vehicles, etc. My bill addresses, we decided to hold back on it because of the cost. In the bill that I offered, that I authored and is in the hopper, it has to do with giving capital credits to gas stations that would put in these pumps. And if you look at the blue sheet that you handed out, a point in fact, Representative Junkie, if you're driving down the interstate, and if you're going to drive between St. Cloud and Moorhead, there are no towns where you can pick this up at this point. And I think your bill is a good step towards where I want to go eventually, when we hopefully have more money. But I think this is a good start. So with that in mind, hopefully next year you'll hear the bill here in the Ag Committee. So thank you.
Representative Otto.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was trying to think of the human element, and I'm wondering if maybe you perhaps can comment. I know for myself I get so darn busy, and I'm sure some of these employees, state employees, do too. And you race, and then all of a sudden you go, oops, I'm almost out of gas. Now, if you live in my area, there's just not much that I could find. And for me, where I actually live in May Township, the gas stations are all at least 20 minutes away, so I have to go to the one that I can crawl to before I run out of gas. So my question is, you know, as you're doing this, Representative Junkie, you know, how much, if you've interviewed your employees or not, how much is convenience factor of can we find a station, and, you know, we've been busy and we had to grab the first available one. And how much of it is there? Do they have just the basic stuff like the maps and information? Is that available to them? I'm just curious if there's kind of a human factor involved, too.
Mr. Morris.
Madam Chair, committee members, yes, there's very much of a human factor involved. When we issue cars from travel management for the agencies to use, we mark them with a round decal on their fuel door, which reminds everyone that it is an E85 car. You may have seen these in the vehicles in your districts. That is a helpful thing. We also provide a booklet which has the map in it with the stations, and it has some informational things about E85. We attempt to bring up the driver's comfort level with the E85. You know, a lot of it, too, is trying it out, being comfortable with it, and being comfortable with the station that you buy it. In my case, and I'm sure in many of your cases, too, I frequently go to the same darn gas station just because I'm used to going there. And, you know, I have an E85 truck myself, and I go to a Holiday station, which is about 3 miles away. I understand exactly what you're talking about. You know, you're there, you need to buy fuel, you're going to the first place you find, but oftentimes you go to the place that you're comfortable buying fuel from.
Representative Pennis.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I do have a suggestion probably for next year, Representative Junkie. This is excellent, and I do support it. And as far as if you look at the map up north, not having any, you know that we're the playground of Minnesota, and we have a lot of state, federal, et cetera, owned land. And so there's a lot of DNR vehicles up there, and I would suggest when they run out of fuel that they walk if they don't put on E85. And that way they'll plan ahead, carry something in the back or whatever. Not only will they save money for the state, help our farm economy, but they'll also make my people happy.
The Pennis commentary. Thank you, Representative Pennis. Representative Blaine.
Madam Chair, it's a nice to see you back. I'm going to try, though. Representative Heitkirk, and I appreciate your initiative in addressing the E85 issue. And I was looking at the map here, too, and you had mentioned that that was something that you were on to was when we looked from St. Cloud to Moorhead, that there isn't an E85 stop on there, and you said that you were looking into this. And I was just curious if you were actually thinking of diversifying the cafe into a convenience store gas station that would offer E85.
Madam Chair?
Representative Eichert.
A very good idea, Representative Blaine.
I love that business diversification.
Any further discussion on the Junkie Amendment A4? Representative Junkie.
Well, just to finish up, again, I appreciate the help of the department, and certainly we'll work with you over the summer and into next year to make sure that things are going the way they should. And I'll trust you to put some big, bold reminders out there in your cars and hopefully get your folks into the habit of using more E85. But the reports will really be the proof in the pudding, Madam Chair, a year from now when we're here and we see that one-year report come in.
Any further discussion on Amendment A4 as amended? If not, we'll proceed to vote. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? The motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Representative Junkie introduces the A3 amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Committee. A3 amendment was brought to me. Actually, the bill was sent over from the Senate by Senator Murphy, who I believe has introduced it and passed it over there. And then I had opportunity to talk with Mr. Heil and I'm trying to think of the organic person over in the department, Gail. They stopped into my office. What this is, members, is we have, again, one of these loan accounts out there, Section 17.115. It's a loan that the department has that you can read what it's for, but it's the Shared Savings Loan Program must provide funds to purchase new and used machinery, installation of equipment, environmental improvements, enhance farm profitability, et cetera, et cetera. What they would like to do, if you look on the back page, they would like to add beginning or expanding organic farming operations as a low-interest loan recipient for the for three-year period of time. Low-interest loan would be a 3% loan. Three-year time is because, as you know or maybe don't know, it takes 3 years to get certified organic. So if you decide you're going to go organic, grow organic wheat for flour, whatever it is, you have to stop using herbicide and insecticides and fertilizers, non-organic fertilizers for a period of 3 years. What happens is, frankly, your yields suffer typically because of those factors, and so you have less yield, but you're not getting the organic price, which is a higher price for your product. Once you hit that three-year period and you get the premium for the organic, it makes up for the yield loss. So what the department would like to do is encourage those value-added organic farmers out there at the 3% loans is the first one I have. The second $1 million loan fund, I understand the current balance is roughly $500,000. It's sitting there, and frankly, the department is having a tough time moving the money out the door because this section of law establishes a 6% rate on this money, and at a 6% rate, you can almost get that at the local bank now. So farmers aren't coming looking for this, rather, and they should. They're loaning at home in the bank. The money that's sitting there, $500,000, is only getting a return today of 1.22%. So if they can get this out the door even at a 3%, when you look at the fiscal note, you see it's a plus $3,000, and that's why. They assume they can get some of this money out the door and actually make more money on interest with it out in the country helping the farmers rather than sitting there in the bank here at the Capitol. And I think it's good that we lock up some of this money, members, too, and commit it before we get to a point where some of these cash accounts start disappearing again like we saw in the last year or two. So that's what I have for you, brought to me again by both the department and the Senate asked me to bring it forward, too, and I think you'll see it in the Senate bill coming across.
Any discussion on the A3 amendment?
Chair.
Representative Magnus.
Thank you, Madam Chair. A couple of questions I guess I have. I don't dispute the need for the change on the first page, Representative Junkie, but the second page, what do you mean by this in your language that says give priority? What does that mean?
Representative Junkie.
I don't know, Mr. Chair, and or Madam Chair, and Representative Magnus. That's the language I was given, so I don't know what it means. If someone's here from the organic program or from the RFA program that's housing this, I'd be happy to hear from them. I see someone starting to move in the back.
Well, Madam Chair, if I might continue then as a follow-up. I'm concerned about giving an advantage over someone else that's competing with someone else, basically. I mean, you're giving an organic farmer an advantage over someone that's not an organic farmer, Representative Junkie, with this amendment.
Madam Chair, I have no problem with that. I'm not doing it, Representative Magnus. It is my amendment, but I'm doing it on behalf of them, and I'd be happy to change that language. I got no problem with that.
I'd suggest we throw
it out. Madam Chair, again, we want to add organics to it because they're not eligible now at all. And they're adding that to the people at a 3% rate that can get it so they can, again, move the money out at that point in time. But I don't care if you give priority to organic over the other ones listed on the front, the person that's coming in and applying for environmental improvements. I assume that's feedlot upgrades, enhancing farm profitability. I mean, there's criteria, obviously, that they have established in rule, too. So they should be on an equal basis as far as top or bottom of the pile. I don't have a problem with that at all.
That's my point.
And if Mr. Rankin can tell us which words on page 2 to remove that would make them just equal rather than priority, I don't have a problem with that.
Madam Chair.
Representative Swenson.
In response to that, I thought that the way the wording was that it was supposed to be equal, that they could apply just for this pool of money just like the other farmers could. Now, I don't know what the other I think Reverend Nunke, you indicated that they probably were at a disadvantage, but it's my understanding that they would be equal without this. Is that, or isn't that correct?
Mr. Heil, could you comment on the present program and how it functions and what this language
Madam Chair, members, my name is Jerry Heil. I'm Director of Ag Resources Management and Development for the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. I don't have the language in front of me in terms of who's eligible, but I do think it includes the organic. I would like to say this is not a department bill. It originated in the Senate, although we had discussed this with the author. And the priority language on lines 19 through 21 at page 2 was not to exclude others, but merely to send a signal that these people would be eligible for this program. That's the way it was explained to us. We do know that the organic producers have trouble with getting access to capital, and that a lot of the conventional lenders are a little nervous about organics and where they're going and making loans on that. So the concept that was explained to us is this would help fill that need for those growers. How much money would go for organic operations versus other remains to be seen. But this simply would give some priority where there currently isn't some reluctance of lenders to extend credit. That was the intent behind this.
Mr. Bozicki, is it correct to say that the organic and sustainable folks are the primary beneficiaries of the program, the shared program that exists now?
Madam Chair, no. They're one of many applicants that can be apply. But in terms of, if you were looking at the portfolio, I don't know what proportion of those would be for organic farmers, but I think it'd be rather small.
Mr. Borboom has come to the table.
Madam Chair, for the record, Jim Borboom, Assistant Commissioner with the Department of Agriculture. Just want to try to help the committee. I think the discussion is a good one, and it is something that we have supported, this idea, in order to expand the eligibility of this shared savings loan program to organic growers. I think maybe one of the remedies that the committee might consider and is, as far as an amendment, is just to strike line 19 and then at line 20 just start the word, the commissioner shall make loans to resident farmers beginning or expanding organic farming operations. One of the concerns, if you leave the language in as is, we may not be able to make loans after June 30th of 2007.
So, Madam Chair, Mr. Rankin, is he saying line 19 on the first page, just strike that, then bring the language, some different language, kind of like what's on the back up to the front? Is that what, did you pick up on that?
Mr. Borbom, were you making a suggestion for modification on page 2?
Yes. Madam Chair, to clarify, my suggestion for the amendment was beginning on page 2, line 19.
Can you repeat it again?
Madam Chair, Representative Junkie, the amendment would be on page 2, line 19 of the amendment. I would strike line 19 and then on line 20 begin the new language with the words, the commissioner shall make loans to resident farmers beginning or expanding organic farming operations, and take the dates out. Otherwise, the concern would be we'd not be able to make loans to organic growers after that date.
Representative Blaine.
Madam Chair, maybe at this time I would ask to move the A9 amendment, which would amend the A3 amendment.
Representative Blaine moves the A9 amendment.
And Madam Chair, and members, in essence, what this would do would be to maybe further utilize these funds in the as part of the bill that we discussed day before yesterday. I know we had a very good discussion about this bill, not only in this Finance Committee 2 days ago, but also in the Policy Committee before. And I know Representative Junkie and I shared the concern that the dairy industry is how vital the dairy industry is, and Representative Junkie had made the comment that we'd like to see $10 million in that revolving loan fund for the dairy industry. When we were aware that there was this additional fund balance out there, I felt that maybe at this point in time this would help get us a little bit closer to that $10 million and would also help us to reduce the interest rate on that program that we had passed 2 days ago in this same committee. Members, this would still would not take away opportunities for sustainable and organic, and actually would help them in the fact that they would have a bigger pool of money to be access in. And I should also point out to members here too that sustainable and organic operators who are dairy operators would actually benefit even further. And so members, I would ask for your support to this amendment and be willing to stand for any questions or discussions.
Any questions on the A9 amendment?
Well, I just want, Madam Chair, just tell me simply what it does. Now that you're done with your speech, just tell me what it does. So I'm just not following. I'm trying to fit it together here. I think we are on the same page. Yeah, I just want
And I think we are too, Representative Junkie. This will just, what this will do is direct this money from the, I'm sorry, I'll pull the mic down. It will direct that money from that account that that is existing out there that you were addressing, and we will redirect that money into part of the bill that we had just talked about on Tuesday as far as the Dairy Improvement Enhancement Fund, and would still be available for the sustainable organic, but also would because they haven't accessed so much of that fund to this point, that we would be able to utilize that fund or utilize those monies in the dairy fund.
And Madam Chair, again, I'm just trying to follow how your amendment does that. I'm just not following it. Maybe Mr. Rankin can help. I don't see where it's referring anywhere to the place you want it to go. You're changing dates. I'm just not following how this is redirecting money into another part of the bill.
Mr. Rankin.
I'm Madam Chair, Representative Junkie. It does not, this amendment is not explicitly, nor the amendment to the amendment, does not explicitly redirect money. However, the fundamental bill that we've already talked about, the Delete Everything Amendment, actually pooled this money with all the rest of the money. The amendment to your amendment on page 1 strikes new language on line 16 and 17, which was that window where you had a cap of 3%. Instead, it leaves the language that instead of fixing the interest rate for this class of loans at a specific 6% rate, says it cannot exceed 6%. So that's one thing this amendment to the amendment does. It lets the interest rate float at anywhere below 6% rather than being fixed.
Just to that point, Madam Chair, page 15, that's what it says on my amendment, so I'm just trying to follow what
line 15.
I already have that in my amendment.
And that stays in your amendment.
Okay.
The amendment to your amendment does not change that. It does remove the new language on lines 16 and 17.
All right.
On the other thing it does is add new language to your amendment, and this new language is an amendment to the base document, the Delete Everything Amendment, which changes the years. We need to look at that, actually. On page 19 of the base document. 19. Line 14, where the new program for dairy currently has a 4% interest rate until July 1 of 2006. This drops it to 3 and extends it all the way to 2007 instead of 2006. So this amendment picks up your cutoff dates instead of the cutoff dates that were already here, and goes to the 3% instead of the 4% that they had already written here.
And Madam Chair,
Representative Junkie.
I'm fine with that, and I'd incorporate that into my amendment. And then I'd like to also incorporate what Mr. Borbom was talking about, if Mr. Rankin can figure out that language.
Madam Chair, committee members.
Oh, one moment. Representative Dimmer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think we're trying to accomplish the same thing here. The concern I have with 19 through 21, and even with Mr. Borbom's change, is it seems to me we might be setting up an administrative quagmire here. What if I've got a loan that's in progress that I've applied for, and Greg Blaine comes along in the middle of my loan and applies for an organic loan? Does that put mine on stop then and hold, and mean that they have to do his first? And what if there's, you know, I guess my question is there an overabundance of these loans that we have to put a priority, or is there plenty of opportunity in that we don't have to even set a priority because it's pretty... Because my understanding is, Mr. Borbom, is that your suggestion was we just say that you make the loans to organic farmers and it takes away all the process of discovery and whether it's a good loan or not.
Mr. Borbom.
Madam Chair, Representative Dimmer, that is correct. My intention is to just to simply add an eligibility to this loan program, which is an existing program, and the new eligibility would be to organic growers. It does not set any priority. Any of the decisions that would be made, obviously, is reviewed by a technical committee, and they'd have to stand the review of that committee as well as a credit review. So it does not establish a priority.
Just to add it.
Madam Chair.
Representative Blaine.
Just a question for clarification. Mr. Borboom, would those applying under that same stipulation as you've just mentioned go through the same criteria as anyone else that would be applying as we had looked at that criteria in other sections of this legislation?
Mr. Borboom.
Madam Chair, Representative Blaine, that is correct. That would be they would be subject to the same criteria.
Representative, oh, were you finished, Representative Blaine?
Yes.
Representative Swenson.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and Mr. Borboom, and whoever. I think my concern is, you talk about making the organics eligible. I guess I thought that the way it was written that it wouldn't exclude them. And I think the question is, the organics, if they're going to be an organic dairy, that they would be on the same level playing field with the other dairymen. Are we taking away the word priority? I think that's the word that's a little bothersome. Maybe to some of us, the organic farmers should be eligible, but should they have I guess I don't feel comfortable saying that they should be given priority.
Madam Chair.
Representative Junkie.
We are, Howard. We are Representative Swenson. Sam's got the amendment. We'll take the priority out. We'll make it permissive, and we're just adding the category. It's all we're doing then. And he's got the amendment ready.
Yeah.
Madam Chair, if he can read it, then you've got it for your clerk, and I'll incorporate it into this amendment. I think we can move forward.
Mr. Rankin, please.
Madam Chair, the amendment to the Junkie A3 amendment will be on page 2 of the A3 amendment. On line 19, delete everything after the F in parentheses. On line 20, delete shall give priority to and insert may provide.
And Madam Chair, I'd incorporate that, and that takes away the priority, just adds a category and puts them on an equal playing field. So I'd incorporate that into the amendment also, and if the Senate passed in a different way, we'll explain to them why we're right when we get over there.
Representative Junkie, to keep things on a level playing field, I'd like to delete on line 15 and restore the old language and delete the new language.
Which page?
Page 1 of the A3 amendment, line 15. Restore the stricken language and delete the new language.
Restore is and delete must not exceed?
Right.
Well, Madam Chair, again, then we're back to the 6% rate, and this money won't be eligible to go out because people can get that locally. We want to make sure that it's a lower rate coming in. Otherwise, that's why the money's sitting there, Madam Chair, is at 6%. If you delete that, you're back to 6%. And then they can go to our local bankers, which they should, and they can get money just about. Representative Magnus, some of the rural guys know, you can go to the bank right now and get it for about that with the interest rates. So we're trying to make an incentive for that money to get out the door. Yeah.
Mr. Borboom.
Well, Madam Chair, I would agree with the comments that Representative Junkie made relative to your amendment. I think the challenge that we're having at the agency is a fixed rate at 6% right now is not competitive in the marketplace. The new language on line 15, page 1, for the interest rate on the loans must not exceed 6% gives the agency the flexibility to offer a lower rate, and we would like to have that option.
Mr. Borboom, I do need to ask, with the Blaine amendment to the Junkie bill, changing the interest rate from 4 to 3%, are we out of balance as far as fiscally is concerned? Are we in balance by adjusting rates down for
Well, Madam Chair, I think I don't have a strong opinion one way or the other on that. I think the interest rate typically reflects the level of risk that any credit has, and if it's a lower rate than this, it may create some challenges for us as far as capturing some revenue or interest earnings to cover any loan losses or administrative reserve. I'll let the committee make a decision on that.
And Madam Chair?
Representative Johnson.
The up to six is important because now that we didn't put a priority on organic, the up to six means that it can be less than 6% for all these eligible items in here. So everything is available now for less than 6%. But if you put this in, then everything's back to 6 and the money's going to sit there. And I don't have a problem with everything being less interest rate, which, again, doesn't give a priority to one or the other. All we did was add the category, and if we can leave the language the same on line 15, it means everyone then will have access to the same low interest rates, and that money should then move.
Madam Chair,
Representative Magnus.
Just another point, and it's not that I'm critical, Representative Junkie and other members of the organic and the sustainables, but I would point out at the top of the second page here on your amendment, you've got a loan review panel there that's in statute already, made up of 9 members, and believe it or not, 2 of those are using sustainable agriculture practices now. And another 2 are also using organic practices. You already have 4 members of the 9 doing that already. So I think that should be well taken care of. They certainly should have an understanding on the loan review panel of the sustainable and the organic practices. So.
Representative Junkie.
Oh, Madam Chair, you're the one that moved to maybe amend. Are you not now? So we're on the equal. I'm not argumentative here. I'm just trying to be helpful. I think everyone should have be available to that lesser money, and if you remove that, it locks it all in at 6%, and then my fear is the money, we're in the same dilemma we're in now, is it's not moving. Representative Blaine actually lowered the rates in the other part of the bill for the other funds, and 3-4 or 4-3 or whatever he did there. And so I just assume that this state wouldn't be at 6, but rather now that could be, it's a floating basically up to the RFA and the board or whoever's determining it for those rates. So I don't think we want to go back to 6. That would defeat the whole purpose of this, and then we might as well not do it because the money won't get used. Following?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. We won't act on that.
Okay.
Proposal.
Well, then, Madam Chair, I just renew the motion as my amendment as amended, and hook her on, and we got time to play with it between the Senate too.
Any further
I incorporated.
Is there any further discussion? Is there any further discussion on Amendment A3 as amended? If not, we'll proceed to vote. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed, the motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Representative Erdahl, A7.
Erdahl. So I'd like to move A7, Madam Chair. And I could speak at length about this. But all it does is add 2 other possibilities or requirements, eligibility requirements for the deed portion of my bill on dairy modernization, adding pasture and forage improvement measures and on farm processing facilities.
Are there any questions on the Erdahl A7 amendment? Representative Penna.
Yeah, Madam Chair, and this is for Representative Erdahl. Have you checked these 2 with deed so we know they're okay already? No?
No, I haven't checked them with deed, but we didn't check the others with deed either.
Oh, you didn't. I understood you did. Okay. The only thing when I look at it, the pasture and forage improvement measures, it seems that the other items that are there are all, how do I put this, tangible things, whereas pasture and forage improvement measures I would take to be best practices or something.
Madam Chair. Representative Erdahl.
You know, you could be right, and I shouldn't have been quite so cavalier in saying that we didn't talk to Deed. I mean, Deed has passed over what we're doing. We suggested to them what should be included, and they agreed with us. We didn't with this. But the thought was that pasture is certainly part of, or can be part of, dairy, and that renewing pasture is an important part of dairy and agriculture, and so we should include it.
Any further discussion on the Erdahl amendment? Now we'll proceed to vote. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, the motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. We have one oral amendment to make, a revisor's issue here on page 11, the third line from the bottom, line 34. You'll see the word quarterly, the second to the last word. It should be changed to annual, so it reads subsequent annual reports. Are there any questions on that? It just didn't get caught. It should have been so that it reads annual instead of quarterly. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed, a motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. On the bill, the motion is that the bill be referred to the Ways and Means Committee. Representative Heidgerken.
Yes, Madam Chair. I still have a follow-up question. We were on the fees before. Someone from the Department of Agriculture would respond. I have a couple questions in regards to this bill, Madam
yes.
Chair.
And you have
there's anybody from the department that would?
No. Ms. Leshner.
Ms. Leshner.
Mr. Freese. Mr. Grinowski. Welcome back.
Madam Chair.
Representative Hyde.
Mr. Leshner, I have a couple questions. Last year I had a very difficult time with the governor's tax bill, which I did vote against because there were a number of ag initiatives that were in there that were not in our ag bill, okay? Regards to an example would be the irrigators fee, among other things that were thrown in the tax bill that we never discussed in ag committee. Are there going to be fees initiated in the new tax bill that's coming up that we did not see here in ag committee that has to do with agriculture that you know of?
Ms. Leshner.
Madam Chair, Representative Heidgerken, I am not aware of any, I personally am not aware of any of our fees being in the tax bill. So I can obviously check for you to make sure, but okay. I'm not aware of any.
Okay. Representative.
Madam Chair, again, I've got some concerns with the environmental bill as well. My understanding that there's some ag-related issues that are being discussed there that never came to this committee. I don't know if you're familiar with that, Madam Chair.
Such as
what? In regards to feedlots, among other things. Okay. But anyways, I was told, that, and I will do some checking, but it may be just hearsay. But you know of no other fees that are being initiated in the tax bill that's not in... And that we're not surprised. Okay, thank you.
Any further discussion on House File 2755 as amended? The chair moves that House File 2755 as amended be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, the motion prevails. The motion prevails. Anyone who didn't get cookies and milk, please help yourself to what remains. I want to thank our wonderful Paige, Andrew, and the coverage from House Information. I want to thank you for being here. Thanks to our committee administrator, Craig Clark, and committee legislative assistant, Dave Easterday, our fiscal analyst, Jim Reinhold, and
I'm Sam Rankin from House Research, and many, many others whom I'm missing. Ed Werner.
Dave
Musilevich. Thank you very much for your work on this committee and helping make it all run smoothly. This hearing is adjourned.